$1,000 per year, you can join WSB's family of radio supporters, enjoy special members' benefits, and get a cool radio thank you gift.
Please help us stay on the air by calling 631-632-6901 or toll free at 1-888-632-9872 or online at wusb.fm/pledge.
WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation.
Again, those numbers are 631-632-6901, toll-free at 1-888-632-WUSB, or online at www.wusb.fm/pledge. Thank you.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook time, once again, for Off the Wall. It's another action-packed edition of Off the Wall here on a Tuesday evening. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
How you doing? Look at this. You made tea. That's such a nice touch. It really is.
Well, usually we have the little bit.
Oh, it's hot as hell. Wow. It's boiling. You just made this, didn't you?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that it is quite hot.
Oh boy! Well, it's the gesture is what matters.
I know it's a departure from our.
Here's my gesture. I'm sorry.
Studio coffee, the finest studio coffee that.
We don't have coffee. We only have tea.
Well, no, I was reflecting. I was trying to be poetic about what we normally drink.
I wanted coffee, but tea is fine, and being boiled alive is fine too.
I'm really sorry about that. It is piping hot.
Piping is not the word I would say, but yeah.
Steaming.
There's another adjective, but... okay, anyway, the point is, we're here for another edition of Off the Wall. Just locked away like some kind of animal. No, but it's good. It's all good. It's fine. I'm happy as... it's amazing.
You can protest. If you want to leave exercise...
We did protest. We should talk about that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But Dr. Fauci confirmed today that's Plan B. Plan A is don't go to large gatherings. But if you have to go, wear a mask. And if you have to scream something at the top of your lungs to exercise your First Amendment right, try to fight the urge to... lower your mask, but keep your mask on while you're screaming at the powers that be. So, anyway.
If you're screaming in someone's face, no matter how stupid they may be, resist the urge to lift your mask and infect them with whatever you have. If you know sign language, that's even better. It really is.
Right, because...
this has been a boon for people that know sign language. Just so you know, you can have a full conversation in the street. I've seen deaf people get into screaming matches, what I assume are screaming matches, just based on the facial expressions, and they seem to benefit from every bit of an argument that I do without any of the risk.
I wish more people knew sign. It's always been something I've toyed around with and had friends and people encourage me. Yeah, I know a little bit of it. I wish more of it was taught, though.
But you know the kind of sign you kind of spell words out. You don't say
finger,
the actual words.
It's called finger spelling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's really the kind of... the minimum, but it is useful. You can convey a lot with just words. It's like the Morse code, I guess, of sign and non-hearing language.
Here's what I mean. It's just my
or visual communication
tone deafness towards deaf people. As far as not understanding why, when we have the ability to communicate with each other using sign language,
right?
Why is there American sign language and other countries' sign language? Why is it just one sign language where you don't have to worry about language differences? It seems like an opportunity for all the deaf people in the world to be able to communicate when the hearing people can't. And I just think it would be like built-in interpreters right there.
True, but I think it's also an aspect of how different societies ascribe meaning to various things.
Uh-huh.
So words that, in other words, things don't necessarily transliterate, I think is the word.
Yeah.
They don't mean the same thing, like in context or in a string of words. If I said to you something random and just put a bunch of things together, that might mean something in a different dialect and cultural context.
Yeah, I'm thinking French people, Italian people, they have all these different phrases.
And we have idioms.
And cultural, we sure do.
We share a lot of them,
and
idiots. We borrow a lot
of idiots
them. And idiots.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Why are those words so close, idiom and idiot?
But it's been like the golden age. Yeah, I know, that is close. A golden age for interpreters on a lot of programming.
Everyone's got an interpreter now.
With the updates and needed public health messaging, which, of course, you've heard right here at WUSB, but I'm talking about the visual medium. We've seen quite a bit of sign, and it would be good to see.
We don't have a sign language interpreter for our show.
No, we don't. I'm sorry.
We should. Captions. We should. Anyway, so yeah,
I didn't mean to meander. We
meandered pretty good there. So yeah, okay, well, let's talk about Fauci. You're watching him on the television before. He was another hearing today.
Yeah. They wouldn't let him go to the bathroom. In fact, at one point he nearly tripped over himself running out of there because they locked him into the building.
I don't know whether to take you seriously or not.
Watch the tape.
Okay, first of all, there's no tape.
Okay, fine. Watch the file.
So right away, I don't believe you.
Watch
anything
the
you
digital
say.
Media. Whatever. The point is, it was a long day. Dr. Fauci.
I can attest to that. It was a long day.
It was. And Dr. Redfield of the CDC, who got a right scolding. He deserved it. And, oh, my. It was astounding. He was taken to task for just basically not reassuring a national policy and not cowering, I guess, to the messaging from the White House, which is contrary to science. And that was it. It was like, you're not doing your job on the messaging. And I think Fauci didn't get that as much because he was all over the media. He was on every show. He was on Snapchats with I have no idea whom. But the point is, CDC didn't lead with the right messaging, and in particular things like that we're probably going to need in the future, strong, real guidance and leadership on what vaccines are, on what these treatments are. We had debates and political sides over different drugs that had ties to people or that were in question because there wasn't any data on them. It's like all this politics around public health, and the CDC leadership was just not there. They were doing a lot behind the scenes. Granted, that's great. Behind the scenes, you have to do that. It's a crisis. We need a lot of cooperation, but I think there was criticism, and it was rightly heard there for Dr. Redfield's leadership there. But I'm not sure exactly what his answers were. The hearing's ongoing, and so we're watching captions actually. So
all right,
but I don't want to get distracted by that.
Well,
it is important.
That hearing is still happening right now.
Unless it just ended, but yes.
I see four talking heads on CNN, so I don't know what that means.
But somehow the channel got changed, but that's not why we're here.
Yeah, you had it on C-SPAN. Okay, but they were just doing something else. So
but my point was, in the midst of other really pointed questions and a little bit of grilling all around, but a lot of good clarification came of it, and demystifying, because a lot and important things about going forward. The one thing that stuck out was their response to having some memory in how they plan for things like this. In other words, getting things supplied and ready to go, because we're still in this first wave, but we're already talking about and anticipating other fallout from this particular microbe. And anyway, I don't want to spend so much time on that, but it's fascinating and good to actually have lawmakers who have constituencies all around the country speak, instead of just having this like top-down presser or sort of show committee from the administration who clearly won't even follow their own guidelines. And that was really what a lot of people wanted to hear is, are we still doing this? You know, we're opening up and this stuff is required. It's helpful, right?
Oh, my God. Trump is having another event today? I didn't know about this. I mean, I knew the event was coming up. I didn't know it was today. He's holding another rally, this time in Arizona. We'll talk about the disaster in Oklahoma. But, I'm just looking at this picture on the news about just showing people in an auditorium not wearing masks, sitting right next to each other.
And
how stupid can you possibly be?
It's terribly stupid. And it's the distinction. I mean, a lot of what people have been pointing out is a politicizing of drugs and PPE and mask wearing is now become that, which frankly I thought would have happened a lot sooner, but it's now become this this sort of symbolized and something we're now going to try to ascribe different meaning to. And by we, I mean people that are unsatisfied with the guidance on wearing masks. So the point is, if you are in large groups, you can be with people. You can be in proximity less than 6 feet if you're using a barrier, mm-hmm. practicing distancing, not screaming in people's faces. the problem with these gatherings like you're talking about in Arizona is that they're the opposite, the antithesis of this. There are people screaming in everyone's face, and it's going to have a consequence. And there are, by the way, in states that are really struggling themselves with resurgences in case numbers and positive cases. So you got to get the language right, too, on
right.
the data, which was also something that came out of the hearing.
Well, on that note, and referring back to what we were talking about earlier, we were at a protest.
Yeah.
We went to one accidentally. We always seem to. We're not, you know, for people who think that there's some kind of network where everyone gets their marching orders, it doesn't work that way. You come upon these things completely randomly sometimes, or maybe you just happen to be in the right Facebook group. I don't know. I'm definitely not in the right Facebook group. But we happened to be passing through Port Jefferson, which is a small village near Stony Brook. Noticed that there were barricades going up, and we wanted to see what was going on. It turned out there was a Black Lives Matter protest for last Thursday evening, about 6 o'clock or so. As opposed to the week before when we tried and failed to find the one in Smithtown, we found the police. We didn't find the demonstrators. This time it looked like we'd find the demonstrators, and it was really amazing. We parked and jumped out and walked up the street where the street was closed off, and we met the demonstrators coming down from the train station on Route 112 and 25A. It's actually got two designations, but that's beside the point. And they were coming down the hill, and we met them right at the point where they stopped and started talking to the people that were in the march, a couple of hundred people, maybe 200-300. And I was so impressed just by the cool, calm, collected way they had it all together. We had walked up from Main Street in Port Jefferson, and there were these, what word can I use? Imbeciles. I'm going to go with imbeciles. At the corner there, waving American flags and Trump things, and I don't know what they were trying to stand for. But they were against what these folks were trying to say. And, I couldn't resist. I said, hey, you're a bunch of fascists. Yeah, I just felt that was my duty. I had to say that. You know, I think you said something similar as we walked by them. And we weren't going to be intimidated by them. We walked up and met the protesters. And the protesters knew that those people were there. They had been told. And what they said was really amazing. They said, do not engage those people in any way. Do not get involved. Just stick to what you want to get out of this, and don't let them derail your message. And I was such a mature, and much more mature than the way I dealt with it. I still felt right calling them fascists. But they were very clear. Don't do that. Just, you know, stick to the march, and they're going to try and unnerve you. And it was just an incredible way of handling that, a mature way. And then what happened was the kneeling for 8 minutes 46 seconds to represent the time that that cop's knee was on George Floyd's neck, and to just be there in the middle of a main road, 25A 112, with a few hundred people. In complete silence for that amount of time, kneeling on the ground, that was one of the most emotional things I have been involved in ever. You realize just how long a period of time that is, but you also realize how much people have thought about this, have devoted themselves to it. And when you see people of all ages, you know, you see kids who you're familiar with riding their bikes up and down the block, they're there. They've thought it through. They're kneeling too. They realize this is important. That is the most incredible thing. That's when you realize the power of the people. And I'm just so happy we walked up and met them at that point, because that was a magical moment, just being a part of that before the march resumed and went through the streets of Port Jefferson. For those people who have not been to a Black Lives Matter march, I strongly suggest you find one and you be a part of it, because you'll realize just how important the message is, you'll realize just how much your voice matters, and you'll realize how so many people live in fear for no reason at all. And it's far beyond time that the rest of us speak up and support them.
Yeah, and anyone is welcome. It's the kind of thing that's inclusive. When they passed by that group on the corner, I was thinking, like, join us ought to be the sentiment and what the community is really standing for. I don't know why it has to be a us versus them situation, or what are you disagreeing with? It is sort of a certain absurdity that I think it was better that people passed by. And, of course, the whole thing was planned, and there were permits and everything that there should have been, and a lot of enforcement presence. And it's unfortunate that that's needed so much.
It wasn't.
But,
it wasn't needed at all. But there was absolutely, I mean, they could have had not a single cop there, and the event would have been exactly the same.
Yeah. And there was, I don't know, there was a lot of surveillance and a lot of barriers and separating people. And that in and of itself, I think, has a certain framing that gets people in a certain mindset, like they should be on edge or that they should have to worry about something that essentially, as the protesters were coming down the hill after taking that knee, like, people from the houses in the community were supportive,
mm-hmm.
for the most part. They were coming out of their homes, hearing the message. I mean, there was a certain biblical feeling to it that people are hearing the word and coming out. And
uh-huh.
I don't know, as you pass by these churches going down through the main town, it really felt good to be saying the things that they were saying as a group, and exercising your own voice a little. Maybe you haven't had a chant or two in the last couple of months.
Feeling positivity coming out of every religious institution you pass by on the street.
Surely.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
That is something to embrace. And
absolutely, yeah.
You have to wonder the people that, you know, are shouting things like, get a job, as you walk by. What does that even mean? Why don't you get a job? You're standing on the street yelling at people for no reason at all. But you have to wonder, who's supporting these people? Well, I know who's supporting them, our president, for one. But seriously, morally, where are they coming from? It doesn't make any sense. And this whole, well, you got to say all lives matter. Hey, you know, we know all lives matter. It's the reason all lives matter that we have to say Black Lives Matter, because clearly in the eyes of many, they don't. Over and over and over again. So don't give us the lecture. It's a waste of time to try and make that into an issue. That is not the issue at all.
Yeah, and shout out definitely to the organization. I know some of the groups from Stony Brook were involved in the planning, and it was really good to see and hear the words they had in front of City Hall there, and to have, you know, thought through and had people guiding people off sidewalks and so on, so there were no confrontations, and people were able to share the moment and share in this realization and not trying to jump through people's rules to have understanding. We've had a lot of that in partisan politics lately, and having different stipulations and criteria to navigate around to a sort of moral good should not be that complicated,
mm-hmm.
to understand and to know what is right deeply. So at a certain point, you may not be able to reach people that are going to have so many provisions around something that is about around standing for good.
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of these marches and rallies and witness the way that authorities deal with it. I think the way it happened in Port Jefferson is a model for how it should happen, with massive support, police present, but again, respectful and supportive. I wasn't aware of any instances where they were facing off against demonstrators. And yeah, you had a few idiots on the sidelines, and they were kept at bay. And I think that makes all the difference. That shows you the true tone of this movement. Now, you know, when other reactions occur, Let's say they decided, you know what, we're going to fire pepper spray at these people. Then the tone would have changed. You see, that is what defines the tone. It's not the movement. It's not Black Lives Matter. It's not saying, hey, you know, we don't want to be shot and looked at with suspicion constantly. When that message is received and respected, then you have a good event. But when that message is challenged and attacked, well, then you change the tone and you have something that is unpleasant. And I dare say, with all the unrest that we've seen in this country over the past few weeks, most of it has been spurred from that completely. All right, you know, you had a police precinct torched, and that was because of what they were doing, how they were treating people, how they responded to the protests. Same thing in New York, in New York City. And we're going to get to that in a second, too, because that continues to be insane. That continues to be completely crazy how property is more important than human life. And there have been more violations against people since all that happened. But I think what we experienced was definitely uplifting, makes me want to go to more of them, and that is how the message will win. That is how it'll be heard. It'll resonate through young, through old, and yeah, as you said, seeing people coming from their homes and businesses, you know, kids, old people, it was the most incredible thing. We were all together in that moment, and great speakers too on the steps of Village Hall. So very inspirational.
Yeah, and the crowds, as you see, I mean, from one state to another and one type of event to another, obey these sort of new guidelines at varying degrees. And in this case, I think the students and the organizers here had a really cooperative crowd as far as wearing masks and all the other things we've talked about with distancing at the current moment in this era.
Yeah, it's interesting too because Port Jefferson has an unpleasant circumstance in that this guy George Wallace. It's not spelled like the old racist politician of the South. This is a new racist of the North that spells his name differently. I don't care how. He owns the corner and continuously puts up these illegal banners, basically praying to Trump and all, things like that. Fortunately, he didn't put anything up to mock the demonstrators. I fully expected him to. But what's particularly funny is that he owns the corner. So it appears whenever he puts up something saying, you know, impeach Cuomo or Trump is great or whatever, it seems like the village is saying that because he's got that corner and only he can speak at that corner. If you try and hold the sign up, you're on private property. You must go.
Yeah, his security guy will come by with a gun.
Exactly. So it's a very unhealthy situation. But I think what's particularly ironic and funny is that George Wallace basically predated all these demonstrators by decades. When he tore down the statue of Thomas Jefferson that was at that corner originally, yeah, he didn't like the statue of Thomas Jefferson because, I don't know, he wanted to put a different statue up. But at the time, Thomas Jefferson wasn't thought of as a controversial figure. He was thought of as a founding father. So him tearing it down wasn't seen as an indictment of slavery or errors of the past. And now, if that statue were up, I dare say people would be saying, you know what, that should go. So hats off to George Wallace for his progressive stance in tearing down that statue decades before the rest of us saw the wisdom of that. It's a step. But there is a whole lot of motion going on as far as tearing down statues lately. Just last night in Washington, D.C., there were attempts to tear down a statue of Andrew Jackson. I think it was unsuccessful because that statue was really welded in there. And now Trump is saying, you know what, you tear down a statue, you get 10 years in prison. Just randomly, okay, you tear down a statue, and that's more than most people get for murder.
What about a wrecking ball?
It counts. It's anyone who vandalizes or destroys any monument, statue, or other such federal property in the U.S., will get up to 10 years in prison per the Veterans Memorial Preservation Act. And, you know, here's the thing. they're tearing down statues. I don't know about Andrew Jackson, and it's expanding a bit, and it's worthy of a discussion. But tearing down Confederate monuments, as far as I remember, the Confederacy fought against the United States, what is the United States now. And we're supposed to have statues up to the losing side? It makes very little sense to me why the president of the current United States would defend that kind of thing. So
Our history. He says that repeatedly, and every time I'm thinking to myself, yes, that's their history. There. Who's they? I mean, you're talking about white supremacy, essentially.
Exactly. Which side did you want to win?
The present tense, right?
Which side did you want to win in the first place? It's disturbing. Yeah, these statues shouldn't have been up in the first place. We fought against many enemies, quote-unquote enemies, over the years. I don't see statues for Ho Chi Minh. I don't see statues for Mussolini. I don't see statues for the Kaiser or certainly for Hitler. Those are all enemies that we fought. And so was the Confederacy. That was an enemy that we fought and won against. And yet, they're glorified. Doesn't make any sense. You know, people can believe whatever they want, but statues, that's kind of, it's in your face literally every single day when you walk down the street. And I had no idea there were Confederate statues in the Capitol, in Washington, D.C. I mean, that's surprising.
Yeah, I think it's this weird mental rewriting that can be done culturally, because when you start questioning the sides of a particular war and you start picking away at those structures, you can start building this sort of real-time present moment that there is a Confederacy that's alive today that somehow can reemerge, and you can go down this sort of logical fallacy around something we've agreed upon being not true. It looked at as in this other way, and you find these affinity groups, and then you're embroiled and indoctrinated in certain ways, and it I find is this sort of slippery slope in thinking about history, and by putting up these structures, there's like an assumption of greatness and honor that they're due, and I don't think it actually pans out, right? It's unfortunate there are so many of them, and I think what some of the reporting has been is that they reemerged sort of post-war 50s, 60s. A lot of them are recent.
Yeah, a lot of them are more recent.
These are not grand pillars and monuments from the ages or a couple hundred years in our country's history.
There's actually a couple of streets in Brooklyn named after Confederate generals. There's a General Lee Drive. There's a Stonewall Jackson Avenue or something. It's on Army property, but it's still named that, and there are still street signs that say that. Now, I don't know if you can get access to that particular plot of land to tear down the sign or something, but the fact that it's there in the first place, that's surprising. That's really surprising to me.
Anyway, it shouldn't be a reformation. Like, the Confederate history shouldn't be a reformation or a rebuke of Southern culture.
Not at all.
At all. And I think that's the comparison, false comparison that's sort of drawn up in people's imaginations, and where I was going with that as far as sort of rewriting history to sort of form this new supremacy and sense of self-worth.
Well, the thing is, Southern culture is so much more than racism. And when you tie Confederacy to Southern culture, it's pretty much a racist statement by saying that that's all the South is. That's all it's known for.
Yeah.
And there's just so much more that the South is known for. And we should be embracing that. We enjoyed the South greatly when we were there. It's an incredible place. And incredible people. And we're learning that more and more as we see them turning out and helping to make things right. So, yeah, let's start looking at the new South, because it's not like the old South, and it we should never try and recreate that.
Yeah, and create these false dichotomies between North and South. There's lots of people from the North that end up in the South and vice versa these days. And, it's worth educating and not having these sort of uninformed senses of homogeneousness about communities that are really a lot different than our stereotypes are, and not give airtime to this kind of glorification of one aspect it's really a particular thing to be so insulted about and say is our history. It's a really specific backwards interpretation of our history.
It ain't my history.
You're talking about the country, and mm-hmm. as a president, you are. So that's the critique.
So intimidation tactics aside, this kind of thing is going to continue. And like I said, it's expanding, and some of the expansions, like for instance in England, saying Winston Churchill's got to go, I still have trouble with that. The guy did kind of save the world. I don't know the facts about how racist he was, but certainly it's not the same thing as a Confederacy or slaveholders or things like that. It should be looked at, absolutely. Everything should be looked at, but I'm not in favor of a purge where everything gets torn down, but everything should be reevaluated every now and then. And you know what? New statues can be put up. There are all kinds of new heroes to embrace.
Yeah, that to me is more inspiring than reinterpreting old icons and trying to figure out if someone was a merchant slave trader or their progeny ends up getting some sort of effigy to them. I just feel like we should create room for more, and instead of trying to recontextualize things that probably don't deserve such a virtuous monument, or a monument to their quote or alleged virtue.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with not learning history. You have to study history, know the names, know the facts. But a statue, I mean, you know, museums are one thing, but a statue outside in a street where we've gone beyond all that, what message is that sending? What does that say to the kids? You know, it's disturbing. It's disturbing it took this long to really analyze this. And that there are so many Confederate monuments in the North, which I had no idea.
Hidden in plain sight.
Amazing. So if you know a Confederate street name or monument, let us know. We'll send a team out.
It's a fascinating look at architecture and the way our cities have these things sort of around us and loom our history, mm-hmm. the way it looms about our cities.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the Confederate flag, that's another ugly symbol that we're still afflicted with. The Mississippi flag still has a Confederate flag within it. I can't believe that is still the case. It's the only flag that has that, but they're holding on to it. That's got to be something people in Mississippi are upset about, and hopefully we'll do something about it, because that just isn't right. And, of course, we've seen what's happening with NASCAR, where they've banned the Confederate flag, high time, and as a result, a whole lot of people showed up with Confederate flags. I say ban them, you know? You show up with swastikas to a bar mitzvah, that's you're not going to be let in. It's not quite the same thing, but it's definitely offensive and should be treated as such.
Honestly, may come to that with NASCAR. I'm not sure how it was handled over the weekend. I know also some of the races were postponed. I was planning on watching a little bit of it, but it's been very busy. Otherwise, what little I caught, it didn't really. I didn't see very much. I saw some sort of staggered start that I think was some sort of respect for Bubba, who is the number 43 driver. And he had some stuff left.
Only African American driver.
Right, of course, yeah. So he's taking heat, and they noted that. And I think the calculation is this is not a segment of their audience they really want to encourage. So if a flag is something that you need to enjoy NASCAR, you're going to end up watching it on TV.
Well, actually, everybody's going to watch it on TV because they weren't allowing an audience in the first place.
Right, right.
These were just morons driving around with their flags outside, and you can't really stop that, but...
at the event.
Something like that. I just saw a whole lot of them.
Well, the point is, if they have spectators again, and you're trying to come in with a whole bunch of flags and cause... some sort of reaction, you may get a reaction.
You should get a reaction.
At the events.
You should get a reaction anytime you display that thing.
You're right. And as you said, like, it's kind of shocking it took this long.
There are a lot more things to focus upon. There are license plates that have Confederate flags on them. You can get those. I think Georgia you can still get those. That's not right either.
There's a lot of novelty plates like that and
I'm not talking about novelty plates. I'm talking about from the Department of Motor Vehicles there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they have like a wow.
Yeah, so that's just, it's not right. There are so many examples like that. And it's the right thing to do to challenge racism, to challenge things that we really need to put behind us so we can move ahead and start embracing the positive things, because there are plenty, as we said, plenty of positive symbols and plenty of great people in the South, and it's time that they stop being held back.
And we know what it means. Look at what that symbolizes. What today does it symbolize that's good?
Right. Hey, is this conversation making you think? Is it making you angry? Whatever, it's important to have these conversations on the radio, and that's why it's important to have a radio station like WUSB. We are in the middle, or maybe the beginning of, we're at some stage in our spring fundraiser. And we have operators standing by right now, if you can believe that. I don't know where they're standing by. They're standing by somewhere. And if you call 631-632-6901 from anywhere in the world, you will reach one of them, and they will ask, how would you like to contribute to WUSB? There are many, many ways you can do that. You can pledge on your credit card. You can have a monthly payment of a very small amount. You can get T-shirts, you can get coffee mugs or tea mugs, all sorts of things to support this radio station, keep us on the air. We've been on the air since 1977, and listener support has played a tremendous part in keeping us going. We are in some very, very challenging times right now, and will continue to be for some time, but your support is what makes that possible. So please, take a moment, call 631-632-6901, call a friend. Have them call that number. As many people as possible calling to support WUSB will help keep WUSB on the air and keep different viewpoints on the air as well. Hey, you might not agree with us. Somebody else will agree with you. Or you might actually call up and be on the air yourself. What other radio station gives you that? WUSB is the one that does around here. And precious few places in this country have that in the first place. So we're very, very lucky to have this radio station. 631-632-WUSB. Actually, that's the on-air line. Don't call that one. Call 631-632-6901. That's the pledge line. Or go to our website, which is up this week, WUSB.FM, and you can pledge there. And there are all kinds of things you can get in exchange. Like I said, T-shirts and coffee mugs, but there's many, many more, too numerous for us to mention here, because we go into Finn's time, and he'd be very disappointed in us. So please, make that your mission today. Get the word out. Because a community without WUSB is a community without a very diverse collection of voices and interpretations and music. Wow, so much amazing music I've been turned on these airwaves. 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and broadcasting from living rooms all over the world right now and into the future. We're going to survive this thing. So will you. 631-632-6901. And thanks for your support.
Happy summer.
Yeah, summer is here. Summer has begun. It's hot. But things are growing. We're doing some gardening. The sunchokes are coming up. Oh, my God. They weren't kidding about those. They're like 4 feet tall now, and no sign of them stopping.
A hardy plant, native species.
What I'm curious about, we planted these things late last fall, or maybe early in the winter. No, I think it was late in the fall we planted them. We thought they were coming up in the spring. We saw little plants coming up about where we planted them. We planted them in rows. And it turned out those weren't the planets. Those were something else. Because a few weeks after that, these other planets just suddenly sprung up and were very, very aggressive. And I realized those ones that came up at first, they were just weeds that happened to come up in about the same place that we planted the other ones.
Yeah, probably when we turned up all the soil and made everything ready for it.
Yeah, but it became clear what the sunchokes were, so we got rid of those other ones and gave them every single one we planted. Like, they all sprouted, every single one. I've never had anything like that happen. We planted
it's
one.
It's amazing, too, because when we planted them, it was so early, and the frosts and overwintering period. It wasn't that cold of a winter, but it's kind of amazing that they survived that.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to plant them before the frost, and they are supposed to survive the winter. But we had never done this before. It's very hard to find sunchokes, too. I don't know why that is.
None of the natural food stores, none of the smaller places, gardening places, produce, farmers markets even didn't really have them.
They have a yield. It's kind of like potatoes. It's not like artichokes.
More like ginger, I think.
Yeah, and so it gives some people gas, I hear. Maybe that's why it's not easy to find.
We're looking for Jerusalem artichoke recipes, too.
It's very healthy for diabetics, though, I read. Very healthy something that you can survive on all winter long. It's very popular in Native American culture. So we're looking forward to that. But before it gets to that stage, it shoots up to almost 10 feet tall and has sunflower-like blossoms in late August. So these seem like really cool plants to have. And they say once you plant them, you'll never be rid of them. So that works for me as well. But there's one plant we planted in a flower pot over the winter. And maybe a listener can write into us, otw@2600.com, and explain this to us. But we planted it in a flower pot over the winter. And I was wondering, why doesn't this just come up over the winter? How does it know if it's wintertime or spring if it's inside and we're giving it light? It should come up. Well, it didn't come up. And in fact, spring came, and it still didn't come up. And after all the other ones had come up, we started wondering, so whatever happened to that one in the flower pot that never came up? And I think you dug it up, and you saw that it was actually, that the roots had already been kind of feeling around.
That's correct, yeah.
And it must have known it was in a flower pot and refused to come above the ground because of that?
Yeah, I transplanted it twice. The one early on was in a lot of soil, and it was very dry. I think it was getting some drops every couple days, but it wasn't enough. And then I moved it to a smaller container and still didn't have any peat or anything, so it was just basically a weird compost, not really a great soil mix or perlite or anything to keep it kind of dry. So I was a little worried it was soggy in there, but it was a little constrained, and I think I eventually moved it again with that peat. We talked about peat and stuff.
It didn't come up until you planted it outside of the flower pot. That's my whole point.
Right.
It somehow knew it wasn't in a flower pot.
When I took the second container and went to go put it out actually in the ground, it had this one really, really long root, and it was the roots on these things itself. It's like a little root vegetable, but it's got little thin, hairy roots, but very thin, wispy ones. This one long one was in the bottom of the container, so I feel like that's part of its ability to sense what's going on. And then, of course, the sun and the moon and the timing of light and all of that, climate, temperatures, affect the other aspects of it sprouting. So when I put it in the ground, I reoriented the little nub on top that I thought might sprout, and lo and behold, here it is. It's starting to come up, and I gave it a lot of room and stuff to grow out.
It's got a bit of some catch up to play because
it's paced different.
Yeah, it's like a couple of months after the other ones started coming up.
Yeah,
so we'll see how it does.
It's a couple of months behind, for sure. A couple of weeks, for sure.
But every one that we planted has come up, so I'm very pleased with that.
Like clockwork.
We're going to keep people updated. One more story I'd like to focus on before we go tonight. We were talking about demonstrations in Brooklyn, among other places, and I remember police cars were on fire. Do you remember that? And this was after police cars had driven into crowds of people. So we're talking about how things were very peaceful in Port Jefferson, how the police were respecting demonstrators. Wasn't the case in Brooklyn, wasn't the case in Manhattan. And this is a natural reaction to that. burning down precincts, burning down police cars. That's a natural reaction when you're being run over and killed. And we shouldn't act mystified or outraged when we see that happening. It's a natural reaction. Somebody hits you in the face, you're likely to do something in return. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have convictions and can stand up to them on moral ground, but I think most people are going to be pushed into something that they normally wouldn't do. And that's what we saw in Brooklyn. That's what we saw. What I've seen since then, it's staggering. These two lawyers who are accused of torching a police car are facing a minimum of 45 years in prison. They torched an unoccupied police car. And that's part of the confusion, too, because I've been hearing a story about a police car with cops in it that had been torched. Completely different. That's attempted murder. That's something people were challenging me, saying, do you condone this kind of thing? Of course I don't condone that. That's a horrible thing. Trying to kill somebody, no matter who they are, is a horrible thing. And I've since learned that wasn't what was happening here. This was an unoccupied, either a police car or a police van. And these two people are both lawyers, believe it or not. Their names are Collinford King Mattis and Uroj Rama. They've been hit with 7 federal charges of use of explosives and arson that carry a minimum sentence of 45 years. And the penalty is so severe because police were allegedly the target. I guess an unoccupied police car is considered police. Yeah. Now, allies claim that Mattis, who's a Princeton NYU-educated corporate lawyer, and Rahman, a Muslim woman educated at Fordham Law School, works for Bronx Legal Services, are being treated unfairly. They've been held in solitary confinement. They're being treated like real terrorists here. Meanwhile, there's this other case that I found, and I had to really dig for this, of a Hudson Valley woman named Samantha Shader, who was also indicted in federal court after police said she tossed a Molotov cocktail at an NYPD vehicle during protests last month in New York City. Only that one was occupied. So that is the story that I keep hearing about, of throwing an explosive device into an occupied car. Very, very different. But listen to how the story is being put out over mainstream media. Shader and co-defendants, Collinford Mattis and Uroj Rahman, were indicted Thursday, as if they were all together. And they weren't all together. These are different cases entirely. One person threw an explosive device into an occupied police car, whereas these other two threw an explosive device into an unoccupied vehicle. In fact, from what I'm hearing, it's a vehicle that wasn't even drivable. It was already, I'm not sure where this actually took place.
Like abandoned?
Not abandoned, but I think under some form of disrepair. You know, basically.
So like a salvage title or not operational?
I think it was being fixed. Not really sure, but it's not the point. The point is, it was an unoccupied vehicle. And, yeah, okay, they destroyed a vehicle. They vandalized a cop car. 45 years in prison for that? Now, I'm not defending the other person who tried to kill somebody. I think there's no doubt about that, and that should carry very heavy penalties. That's not what any of this is about, and I think even after you get run over by a police car or shot in the face with pepper spray or whatnot, you still don't resort to murder. You might get very angry, but that's not acceptable behavior. I think everybody gets that. I don't think you'll find anybody who will try to condone that kind of behavior. But to equate the two, that's what we're seeing, and that's what I'm shocked by. And to see them being threatened with a minimum of 45 years for destroying a broken NYPD car after the NYPD attacked crowds of people completely without cause, you know, I think we ought to take a lesson from Minneapolis, how they dealt with their precinct burning down and saying, yeah, you know what, understandable reaction. Nobody got hurt. That's the important thing. Let's move on.
Is that with damages or without damages?
What do you mean with
like
damages?
Paying for the vehicle itself?
Well, if they're in prison for 45 years, how can they pay for it?
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, what, because I mean, maybe I could see $45,000 for the van or whatever you torched, the cost of it, in other words, and maybe some kind of attempt at serving time, having them serve time, but I don't. That seems wildly over. So, I mean, imagine you're doing 45 years and you have to pay for the damages, including the vehicle, plus the lawyer's fees, plus, I mean.
Yeah, look, charge them with vandalizing something. Okay, if somebody came and threw something in my car and destroyed it, charge them with that. Because it's no different. Cops are human beings. If we treat them like human beings, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a really good thing. So let's stop with this, oh, my God, it was a cop, therefore you have 50 times the penalties and can be killed on top of that. No, that is the problem. Let's move beyond that. Hey, we're out of time, but I can't let the week go by without mentioning the disaster in Oklahoma that took place with Trump. Wow. Yeah, nobody showed up. Well, I never thought this would actually be a possibility. 6,000 people showed up. They were expecting 20,000 in the arena itself and a whole bunch more outside the arena. It turns out that through a combination of TikTok and K-pop, all these fake registrations were generated so that even the mainstream media was reporting 1 million people had registered for this event of his on Saturday. I thought something was wrong with that right away. I was very scared at that point. 1 million people really want to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma to see Trump. Didn't seem right, and it wasn't right. It was completely fake. And it was just the most amazing thing seeing that unfold live on TV and to see the reaction afterwards. So I feel it's only right to basically play some K-pop. Maybe play some K-pop all the time from now on as thanks for making such a mockery of this. And this is what it sounds like. This is actually a hit from a group called Everglow, called Dun Dun. There's so many songs. Thank you, K-pop. Thank you, TikTok. Thank you, everybody who stands up and resists in one way or another. Your actions, your words, they mean more than you think. And we hope you continue.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
No, it really doesn't.
But a good plan, well executed, that can be a lot.
Yeah, you've inspired us, that's for sure. Hey, write to us, otw@2600.com. And please, don't forget to call 631-632-6901. Support WUSB, because a lot of voices have been inspired over these airwaves as well, and we hope for many, many more. See you next week. Good night. You want some ballet? 겹침없어 so strong. 잠깐만 치면은 challenge. 뒤집어버려 bomb the bomb. 같은 시간을 잡아 내 숨을 턱 막히게 해. 멀쩡한 코 나의 몸짓은 hot like. 이거 하고 난 지금 won't stop can't stop. 너를 노려. 뒤에 사람 나도 결국엔 조금만 무인도. You're so dumb.